so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, it's time for another edition of the Toy Department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. How are you today, man?
Oh, I'm doing good. I'm feeling fresh, kind of. Yeah, I'm overall, I'd say I'm on the high side of a 1 to 10 scale, so somewhere between 6 and 7.
Are you fully recovered from the weekend?
No, man, I don't even feel like I'm fully recovered from, like, the 4th of July trip I took a month plus ago, so I'm hoping I can get some relaxation in this weekend. It seems like I've had some sort of festival or trip to make every single weekend for the last month and a half.
I feel like we should probably say up front that we did not do a live podcast.
Yeah.
You know,
there were a couple times we did say hello at Outside Lands. But you know, it's a lot's going on. a lot of moving parts and people.
That festival thing is really hard, man, when you're like,
yeah.
Especially, you know, coming from a place that I used to live, you know,
where you have a lot of different people that you want to check in with.
Yeah, and you got to try to, like, hold these, like, large groups together, and everybody's got different tastes, or somebody wants to go here, somebody wants to go there. Probably did not help that when I saw you on Friday that I was bombed out of my mind. I don't know if you could tell that at all.
I think it would have helped the podcast if we could have gotten a second to sit down and record. But yeah, I could tell that you had partaken in the festivities of the festival. But
what time was that? Was it like 6 o'clock?
Yeah, it was evening.
Okay, uh-huh. I think I'd been there for like 3 hours.
Hey, man, that's a lot of time.
In fact, nope. I think less. In fact, yeah, I don't think I got there until like 4:30.
You should stop. Yeah, stop sewing yourself down the river here. The
that's great.
The funniest thing about Outside Lands in general is it really is a food and drink festival with some music thrown in.
Yeah, like, agreed.
The quantity and quality, for that matter, I don't mean to diss it, but the quantity of foodstuffs and drinking options is excessive, which I guess is nice because, you know, you can usually find somewhere without a line, even with the crush of people. But it really is crazy how many different food trucks, food stands, food vendors, food, you know.
Yeah, see, I get into that. I don't know if you were, like, perusing the app to find particular places
that you want to eat.
I'm a bit of a restaurant guy, so I like that stuff.
I mean, I love food, but you're going to have to educate me a little bit about the app.
So did you, like, so what was the best thing that you ate?
Oh, man. I got this Hawaiian poke thing that, you know, it's just like raw tuna with spices and stuff, and it came with a wonton.
That is poke.
It's super simple. It was like a poke fish and chips, you know, wonton chips and poke.
I'm guessing that was from Pacific Catch. Does that sound right?
I believe it was. Yeah. And it was effing good. What else did I have that was really good? You know, I discovered on Friday and then utilized on both Saturday and Sunday that there was a farmer's market stand where they were just selling apples that were
That
delicious.
Is literally the most Outside Lands thing anyone has ever said, I feel like.
You look, man, apple is a good festival food. It's easy to eat. You know, all that's left is a core you can just toss in the compost bin and you're out of there, you know. It's tasty and refreshing and healthy for you. I enjoyed that.
There's an item that was not there that's been there every other year that I've been to the festival. There's a restaurant, I think it's in Oakland, called Homeroom.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe
Homer,
that doesn't
it's one
exist
of my
anymore.
Favorites, mac and cheese.
Yeah. They had bomb mac and cheese there every year. Now, to me, mac and cheese is a great festival food, but then maybe that says something about my eating habits versus
No,
your apple.
I mean, mac and cheese is a great anytime food. It's Homeroom is one of my favorite first date spots, which may explain why I'm single. Mm. And It is phenomenal. I did not realize that they are usually there. But,
yeah,
absent
this year, though, so it wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah. The best to come to Oakland and dine in.
There
next
you go.
Time.
The best thing I ate was from a restaurant called Rich Table, which is pretty well known in San Francisco. And I had porcini donuts that were served with this like cheese sauce. And they were amazing.
I'm sorry.
No one knew what was going on.
I'm sorry.
And there was no line. It was so great.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Porcini donut?
Yes. So
like
a
mushroom?
Like a fried donut with the dough dusted with porcini mushrooms. So it had like kind of porcini mushroom flavor.
So a savory donut.
A savory donut, yeah, with a cheese sauce.
Whoa.
It was incredible.
I don't know if... Man, I really don't know how to feel about that.
That was actually right before I saw you, I believe, on Friday, because we were at Lapsley.
Yeah.
Wasting time, essentially.
Yeah, Lapsley but eating is donuts. The area where I saw you.
and enjoying ourselves. So, yeah, Rich Table. I would recommend just popping in and grabbing the donuts, you know, sometime, period.
Rich Table, huh?
Yeah, porcini donuts.
All right.
Porcini had some ramen donuts. That was pretty good on day two. And all right, so food was good.
Food was great. I had an incredible cookie. That was, I forget the cookie company now, but I had an incredible chocolate chip cookie as well.
It was called Mr. Stoner's Weed Time Cookie Co. Was that it?
No, it was just a regular cookie. Okay. This was totally innocuous. Now, why I wanted a cookie so bad at 2 p.m. on Saturday is a different question.
But I think it's been answered. All right, so musically, anything that like what came, what blew your mind from Outside Lands?
You know, I don't want to insult anybody, but the only thing that really jumped out at me was the Claypool Lennon Delirium, which I think I mentioned to you when I saw you on Friday. And it was a weird deal because I wasn't expecting to get to see them. And so I think part of the reason it jumped out at me is like I didn't really process the fact that I was about to go see Les Claypool, who's a wizard on the bass guitar and one of my favorite people to see live. I think he might be, for a singular person, he might be the singular person that I would be most interested in seeing live of anyone in the entire world, just because what he does on a bass guitar, I think, is unbelievable. And Sean Lennon was surprisingly awesome on the guitar. So watching them sort of jam out a little bit was awesome. The second most surprising positive thing was actually Third Eye Blind, believe it or not. Who were ridiculous, but I thought a lot of fun. And then, you know, the bands I went to see were really good. Chance was really good. Radiohead, I thought, was good. And LCD Sound System, also enjoyable.
So, now that was your first LCD Sound System show, right?
Correct. But I'm not a super fan, you know. I'm a fan.
Okay, so as a novice coming in, you know, what were your impressions?
It was great. It's an awesome spectacle. You know, there are a lot of real musicians on the stage trying, you know, getting into grooves. It's fun. It's a dance party. And I think the thing that was the most impressive to me was James Murphy's voice. And we talked about this. I think of him as, oh, you know, he's the guy that yells about Daft Punk playing at his house.
Yeah, he does a lot of sing-talking on the record.
Yeah, you know? It's like sing-talk, not rapping exactly, but like it's more talking with attitude than singing half the time. And live, he sings it. And man, he can sing. He goes up. He has a falsetto that's very impressive. He spices up the vocal melody a little bit live, a lot bit, actually, I would say. And he's great. I mean, I think he's a great front man of a band. What's interesting about LCD Sound System is they're essentially a DJ project on the record, but a band live.
Yeah, and they've been configured that way long enough that I think it's kind of become more of a band, you know, sort of all the time. almost all those guys have pretty much been playing with them for years now. So right. It's a point where when they reunite, you know what I mean? It's not like just James Murphy decided to make a record.
No.
You know what I mean? Like all the principals are involved. It's not LCD without Nancy at this point.
Oh, and Nancy is the dour, if not downright angry expression on Nancy's face throughout the entire experience, definitely added to my enjoyment.
I would marry Nancy Wong right now if she was available. Just saying. I've never met her, but
is she available? Here. I mean, should we?
I don't even know.
I think we have. This is a podcast with great power. Maybe we should.
Yeah, let's see. I'm just saying, Nancy, if you want to give love a shot, nowhere to find me. Yeah, it was a really great experience. I'm sure I'll be in another Outside Lands again. We talked about this, I think, coming in, that it's probably my favorite of the major festivals, and I've been to pretty much all of them. There are a couple that I would like to check out that I hear are cool times, like the Hangout Festival, and a few more. But I'm going to just jump out on a limb and go Outside Lands, the best.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that would be too controversial. I have to say... You know, I don't know. I assume you're a VIP at most of these festivals.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's hard to talk about that without sounding douchey, though. You know what I mean?
No, I know. Well, but you deserve it. You're a radio professional and in this industry. I mean, this is your stuff. It makes sense. I only say that because I do wonder how different the VIP and non-VIP experiences are. And even knowing that they are very different... I wonder if they are more different some places than other places. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder if your power rankings for festivals are very different from, you know, the bourgeoisie power rankings.
You mean – you're talking about – well, I mean, look, a lot of Outside Lands, you know, me enjoying Outside Lands is based on the experience of the festival as opposed to – the, you know, lineup from year to year, because obviously that's
totally. I'm thinking more in terms of like, there's not so much extra food in the VIP, but it makes certain things much more convenient.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I tend to go to VIP at all these things, which I would hope means it's sort of on an even level. But I think a lot of the things that I, you know, think about that are great for Outside Lands, they're not really VIP tangible things. They're things that are kind of accessible to everybody. The food, the weather, the park, the scenery, like those are not exclusive to people who have a wristband.
Yeah, that's true. And before we move on, the weather was what I think a lot of people – it was the sort of weather people like to talk trash about for San Francisco. And what you realize, you know, it's foggy and generally chilly. What you realize at a festival like Outside Lands is the weather you want for a festival is foggy and perhaps a little chilly.
Yeah.
Because it got sunny on Sunday. And man, you know, I have obviously been to sunny festivals in the past and non-sunny festivals in the past. So I already held this opinion. But there's nothing like a... foggy Saturday followed by a sunny Sunday to really drive home how rough a festival is when the sun is out.
Yes. Well, and, you know, having the experience of Lollapalooza.
Oh, man. Well, also earlier. It's humid. Lolla is...
Oof. Yeah, you're going to get a rainstorm in there at some point, if not two. You know, Coachella, you're going to deal with, obviously. You can deal with extreme temperatures. Like backbreaking temperatures, the occasional windstorm, all sorts of stuff. Now, Outside Lands is variable. You got to do the layers and all that, but I'll take that weather for 3 days out in the, it's just better.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, so should we move on to the world of television?
Yeah.
Is it television? It's called.
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, we're still watching these Netflix things on television. We talked a lot about peak TV, mm-hmm. and I do think some of that plays into the experience of the next show that we're going to talk about, which is Stranger Things on Netflix. Now, I sent Kolsky a text last night about, hey, I need to do the podcast live from location. And he's like, and so we got into a little equipment discussion, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to be broadcasting from, I don't think Stranger Things is that good corner.
Yeah.
And to me, it's kind of population one. I feel like I'm pretty much the only guy over there.
I should hope so. I don't know why other people would act like they idiots.
You know, obviously, look, we talked about this last week. I wasn't that excited about the prospect of this show going in. So maybe, you know, it plays into just some of the things that I don't enjoy.
Because you were like, nostalgia, not my thing.
I'm not anti-nostalgia.
You're like the innocent time of the 80s in my childhood, not interested.
Yes, that's, but I don't feel that way. There are certain things about the 80s that I'm interested in. I just didn't, it's not innocent, it's not, hey, I don't want to go back to the 80s. In fact, I watched Everybody Wants Some on the plane, and I thought it was delightful.
Oh, good, I like that too, yeah.
It's more, I was like, do I need another retelling of E.T.? You know, a reimagination of Amazing Stories. You know what I mean? Like, no, that prospect did not excite me at all. The particular world we were going to enter.
I guess it was pretty didn't fire E.T.-ish.
Me up. Yeah.
I didn't honestly think of that.
I should say I'm 6 episodes in, so I definitely have not finished the show, and maybe it really picks up on the back half. But I do feel
there's only 8 episodes.
I've watched enough, I feel like, to comment on it at this point.
Oh yeah, no, I don't. If you don't like it through 6 episodes, I don't know that the last 2 will make a huge difference.
Yeah, and there are a couple things.
Tell me what you don't like about it.
I don't care.
If that's one thing, if you're just like, I don't think anything is great. I don't think it's as great as everyone's saying. But do you actually dislike it?
I wouldn't say I dislike it. I wouldn't say I dislike it. I don't enjoy it. I'm not interested in it. Like, I don't care what happened to the kid or to Barb.
Really, or, the mystery doesn't pull you at all.
I'm not interested in what the monster is. I finally got to the point where I saw, you know, got a good look at the monster. It does nothing for me. Like, it leaves me.
Well, it's not
cold.
So much what the monster is to me as what it's doing, and I don't know. I think it is less about. There's nothing shocking about the story or as you point out with the E.T. thing. I didn't necessarily consider E.T., but it's not as though I walked away from the show saying, oh, God, what an original piece of dramatic storytelling and what incredible twists and turns I never saw coming. It is kind of a period piece, and it's definitely working on my nostalgia, and frankly, I experienced probably less of the 80s than you did.
Yeah. And look, it's not without its charms.
Maybe that's why. Maybe it's because, for me, it's evoking nostalgia of, like, other 80s movies. Yeah. But I also just think that Winona Ryder's awesome, and David Harbour's even better.
I'm so glad that you said that, the first part of that sentence. Because, you know, look, maybe I'm now coming at this from an Emperor's New Clothes perspective where it's not so much that this is bad. Like I said, I do find some redeeming things in it. It's the visual look of the show is great. It's a loving recreation of those times. You could be watching Goonies or whatever. Right. Sure. Like, I'm all for that. On a personal level, like knowing that they shot this in Atlanta the way they've kind of dressed it up, it's I can sort of tell, but it doesn't really look like Atlanta. I find really interesting, but I just hear the stuff in this voluminous praise, and the part that gets me the most is Winona Ryder. I think she's awful, like
really?
So over the top and hammy. I find it distracting. That performance, like I just layering it on, I think
she's
bothers
trying
me.
She's portraying the part of someone who feels crazy, knows that what she's saying is crazy, and yet also believes following, sort of pulling the string, is the only way to find her son.
Yeah, I think, but she's like also hysteria, just hitting me over the head with crazy and hysteria, and like,
I feel like
people talk about the cigarettes
believable.
And like the just the way, like, it's just all so over the top. I just,
oh, see, I think her hysteria is very believable. I really do.
I, you know, I mean, I just, you know, when you look at like her performance on like Show Me a Hero.
I didn't see that.
Which you know, had, it was another recent performance she did that had some desperation in it. I just, which is so much more layered and mannered and more interesting than this, which is just the shrieking crazy lady for. I just, yeah.
She like does I, reach shrieking crazy lady, but I actually think she plays the range of it pretty well. I really disagree on this one.
I like, I legitimately want to fast forward scenes that she's in.
Do
if,
you like
if I was watching on my Xbox, which has a convenient fast forward, versus like my Chromecast, yeah, which doesn't, I probably would.
What's your thought on David Harbour?
David Harbour was good. I thought, I don't have a problem with that performance. I'm not gonna sit and here and hate everything
Matthew
about
Modine?
The show. Matthew Modine, that's another like arc. Like I don't care what he's doing to the girl.
I thought that was the worst part of the show. The Matthew Modine stuff. Not that he was bad or anything. Just like, I don't know that they flushed that storyline out enough, or that we care enough about anyone involved.
There's now that's nostalgia for me. I have a little bit of like, hey, it's Matthew Modine when he shows up on the screen. I kind of like that. This show has not touched me in any way. And I you know what? I almost feel like Winona Ryder, that I'm totally out there on this island.
Well, if you are like Winona Ryder, you'll probably be vindicated eventually.
I suppose that's true. I just don't look. I want to at least raise the question: are we so desperate for conversation pieces? And in this era of TV where things are hard to find, but Netflix sort of makes it convenient, like they just sort of drop this thing on the front page and we can all watch it and talk about it.
I really don't think that's it. I mean,
you don't
I
think that
I really
that colors
think
our perception of these shows in some way, like, hey, this is the thing that is in the conversation now and we should be talking about this? Like, why aren't we talking about Tallulah, you know, which Netflix dropped last week? It was the Allison Janney, Ellen Page, Chino reunion. You know what I mean?
That sounds great to me. I literally had never heard of it before this moment.
Right,
because
it doesn't
it.
Have the placement on the Netflix website. I'm guessing that Stranger Things does. That, at least
well,
that's been
I mean,
my experience.
Well, I mean, that's not what I'm responding to. I'm responding to, a cultural conversation about the thing.
Yeah.
So,
but that's what I'm saying is like the origin. Look, Making a Murderer was great, and I can talk about it obsessively and endlessly forever, but I found it because it was the front thing on Netflix that, you know, during the holidays when you're sitting at home. And
yeah,
I think Stranger Things kind of had that sort of summer vacation deal, and that's how people found it, and they started talking about it, and that's how you found it. You know what I mean?
That may be how I heard of it, but I chose to watch it. I did not watch Making a Murder. For me,
dude, what are you doing? Go watch Making a Murderer.
We've talked about this. That's a bad time. I got enough problems just dealing with the real news that I can't keep out of my brain. Like I can't inundate myself with more misery and frustration at this point in my life. It's just not feasible. That aside, I watched Stranger Things because, based on what people said about it, I was interested in it. And that paid off. I do think that it's a thing. It's the sort of show that I don't think would garner this much attention under normal circumstances. Is that a reasonable thing to say? So I think there's something to what you're saying, but at the same time, I just think they do an incredible job of setting the period and making it real. And I do think there's some really good acting performances.
I would agree
again,
that they set the period,
the
but
line,
isn't that just the baseline for a movie, for a period piece? I mean, couldn't you say the same thing about Everybody Wants Some? Or tons of 80s things that aren't actually good? You could say the same thing about Vinyl. Sets the period well.
I think you could say the same thing about Vinyl. Yeah. And I couldn't I would have to think more about why I stopped watching vinyl after three episodes and stuck with Stranger Things. I think probably the subject matter and the intensity of the experience has something to do with it, that when a Stranger Things ended, there were questions and mysteries, and I wanted more. Whereas when vinyl ended, it was like, wow, that was like a nice hour of doing cocaine. I think I need a break.
Like, my legit sensation when Stranger Thing ends is like, oh, maybe I'm close to the part where it gets good.
I'm surprised. I'm surprised because I don't think – look, and I think I'm repeating myself to a degree. I don't think the plot line is where it is awesome. So I can understand your frustrations or not being excited by or interested in the intricacies of the plot. But I also – I think there's so many good things about it that it's really enjoyable.
Well, I just – I hear Chris Ryan and Andy Greenwald bestow their, you know, fake TV championship belt on this show, and I'm just aghast.
I would not go that far.
Like – it's not even in the same realm as The Night Of, to me.
I agree with
that. In terms of the quality show production, and that show keeps chugging
along. I totally agree with that. But to me, you know, The Sopranos is not in the same The Sopranos falls way short of The Wire. Now, yeah. I'm not saying Stranger Things is The Sopranos by any means. I'm just saying, like, being worse than The Night Of.
Right. My point is not like, okay, hey, The Night Of's better. What are you guys doing? My point is a little more like, how is this in the conversation with The Night Of? You know what I mean?
Because I think while
like
The Night Of
talking
does...
about it as a television show made on that level, I'm just confused.
I think production wise, it is on that level. I think there's more to the story of the Night Of. There's more moral implication. There's more, you know, societal commentary. There's
better acting performances.
Say again?
Better acting performances.
Again, I think
I know you like Winona Ryder and some of the, but I mean, come on, Riz Ahmed, Michael K. Williams,
Riz Ahmed and John Turturro are both incredible.
Yeah, I mean,
but I thought David Harbour. I really think David Harbour's awesome in Stranger Things, and I'm not sure. I don't know. Is John Turturro better? I don't know. It's close. I think there's more weight to The Night Of. It's weightier, and that's fine. But that doesn't, to me, necessarily discredit Stranger Things. It's a different thing. It's a different type of project.
Yeah, look, I'm not saying it's not The Night Of, so therefore fail. I'm just saying it's weird that this
everything
show is
must be The Night Of.
Yeah, it's just weird that it's being talked about like in that same breath, or in some cases, hey, this is even better than that. And I just
are people really? I don't even think.
I just told you that example.
I don't want to do our podcast as analysis of somebody else's.
I know. I don't want to either. But I,
I'm not even sure they were really. I don't know that I interpreted Annie Greenwald and Chris Ryan as saying, "Oh, Stranger Things clearly better than The Night Of." I think that sometimes when you talk about a belt or something in those sorts of terms, there's a temptation to like honor something that just happened or like throw the belt in a certain direction. Just it's like giving MVP awards.
I'm not gonna deep dive, but I can off the air I'll give you the context of that comment, and no, that's exactly what happened. Yeah. All right, so you want to talk about Mr. Robot season two?
I do, especially after I'm almost a week behind, because obviously there's a new one tonight, so yeah. People listening to this may have seen an episode additional. What am I saying? One more episode than we have.
Yeah.
But I am almost a week behind, so I just last night in real time watched this most recent episode, and I feel a little bit like the great Dumb and Dumber scene where Floyd trades the van for a moped, and
I may not be familiar with this scene, so go ahead.
Oh, well, so Jim Carrey's character and – basically ends up driving the wrong way for like several hundred miles, I want to say, at one point on their cross-country road trip. And Jeff Daniels' character gets so pissed that he leaves. He gets out of their dog van and starts to walk somewhere. And then like one of the next scenes is Jim Carrey pulling up on a little sort of moped next to the walking Jeff Daniels. And he's like, I traded the van for this motorcycle. And Jeff Daniels turns to him and says, just when I thought you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this. And totally redeem yourself. this episode, I loved it. And what's interesting is I loved it in large part, I think, because it was very different from other episodes we've seen recently and opened some very bizarre but I think interesting new doors. And also because – did we decide which Gummer it is? I think it's Grace Gummer.
It is Grace Gummer. Yeah, we
– Oh, my goodness.
We definitely decided. You just said the wrong one last time. That was all.
Right. Well, right. I didn't know which Gummer it was.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
Because I – that's not accurate. What I didn't know was that there were two Gummers.
Oh, right. Correct. Yes.
But it is Grace, and she's fantastic. And I almost feel like, I don't know if this was always the plan or not, but somehow Sam Esmail just found that two of his most interesting characters and arguably the two best actors on the series are Grace Gummer and B.D. Wong. And they have this incredible extended sequence that I have no idea if it'll be relevant whatsoever to the story. I'm not sure it made much sense in the context of the broader picture. But it was awesome watching the two of them interact. And you know, the B.D. Wong character, and slight spoiler alert here, is such an interesting one. The way that he is, you know, he's a major Chinese official and also running this, I guess, the Dark Army, right?
Yeah.
As the White Lotus? Am I getting all the names
White Rose,
right here?
I believe it is, isn't it? Am I wrong?
Oh, White Rose?
I think it's White Rose, okay. Yeah.
Was that racist that I said White Lotus?
No.
he is – it's an interesting character to think about. It's an interesting portrayal of the character, his obsession with time. And I think Grace Gummer is just phenomenal in this. She's – I don't even know how to explain how much I'm enjoying that performance. Yeah. Because
she's a presence, I agree.
And it's very subtle. She's not loud or outsized. And again, spoiler alert at this point, but the gun shootout at the end and sort of the uncertainty of the end of this episode in general, because Elliot's getting his ass kicked and you know, Grace Gummer under fire, and I'm still not totally sure what they're even doing in China in the first place. You know, I guess they're inspecting the sites that were hijacked, but I don't know. There are a lot of times I'm not sure why we're looking at things, but this episode, at least, I really enjoyed what I was looking at.
Yeah. So, you know, my view of the show, and I don't think I'm the first person to say this, this feels like a breakthrough band's second album, this second season, you know, where there are, you know, a lot of things that attracted you to Mr. Robot in the first place are still there. Like, the visual style of this show is as good as any on
television.
And
that was another thing, quickly, that I thought this most recent episode, some of the shots, the entire extended sequence with Grace Gummer and B.D. Wong, the acting, the shots, the just everything about it was awesome, I thought.
Yeah, the way the shootout is filmed, some of the little visual tricks that they do, you know, like where, you know, in the first scene, you know, Elliot's hacking, and they kind of do this little thing where they sort of put him really small on like a full black screen and then kind of
fades out behind him.
Yeah, you know, like little, the little tricks like that that sort of, you know, give you a sense of the drug-induced, insanity-induced sort of headspace that we're, you know, most of the show operates in. That part of the show is great. And, you know, I think that it seems like Sam Esmail made a choice that spending this entire, you know, from what I understand, right, the show had been sort of conceived as a movie originally, and the first season was essentially the length of the movie.
I got the impression, I mean, it was conceived as a movie, but I've gotten the impression that the first season was maybe the first third or two thirds of the movie.
Oh yeah, see, now I understand that kind of the whole sort of the major arc of the movie.
So
but
that
I could
sort
have that
of
wrong.
Where
I don't
the
know.
Movie was
yeah,
end.
And now yeah, and so now I sort of think it's like it's a big hit, and they're going to make a lot of seasons, and they're trying to figure out what to do. And I think, rightly so, the show is now sort of concerned with involving a larger web of characters. And I think what happens with the show is that not all of those characters are interesting. I'm encouraged, like you, by this last episode because I think that, you know, this one focused on two of probably the most interesting ones. But some of these things are working and some of these plot lines are working, and then others of them feel like waste of time.
Well, I think can we talk quickly, because this is specifically germane to the point that you're making. One of the ones that I'm guessing feels weird and useless to you, because it often has to me, as my dog wakes up and starts to make noise, is the Tyrell Wellick's wife storyline.
Yeah.
Because not only do I not especially care about her, but also I have had no effing idea what she's doing. Like,
there's a lot of that in this show. Right?
Yeah, but that was another thing. See, the reason I brought it up is that was another thing that I feel like this episode, there was finally a moment where I this is hard to explain without the show in front of me. But there was a scene where, I mean, she's sort of waiting for Tyrell. No one seems to know where Tyrell is except Mr. Robot. So one of the mysteries of this show that has not been solved at all, really, is that leading up to the hack, Elliot and Tyrell Wellick did something. Right? We still don't know what the hell they did or why Wellick was even involved. But there, some of the weirdness his wife was getting up to gave me the impression this week that she's – we've sort of seen she's waiting for him to come back. But now there was an interaction with the guy she's been paying off, who she ends up, again, spoiler alert, murdering in this episode, where she says – he says something about, what are we even doing protecting a guy in a hoodie?
Yeah.
And that's the first moment that it's like, wait a second. Maybe she's not just waiting for dude to come back. She's somehow involved in whatever it was that they did on the night of the hack.
Yeah, but I mean, is it enough to just say, like, well, she's involved in the story? I'm assuming the reason she's been getting screen time is that this is going to go somewhere. It's just hasn't been that interesting to watch. All right.
I think it's finally starting to go somewhere. That's what I'm saying.
I should say it's been very interesting to watch on mute, if you know what I'm saying. But not so much with the talking.
She is a very pretty lady. She has mesmerizing lips.
Yeah, she does.
But I you're right. It's been weird and slow to watch. But again, I do feel like this is the kind of show where, based on the payoff three episodes down the line, I could look back at some of those slow, odd scenes and say to myself, "Huh, that was an interesting way to build the tension on this and to sort of." Keep us in the dark, but try to keep us hooked.
It probably sounds like I'm more down on the show than I am. Like, I feel like this is lots of shows go through this process, and that it's all very, like, fixable. You know what I mean? And I'm sort of intrigued because I do think that there are – the show's sort of dotted with minor characters who can be really interesting. Like, I think the Evil Corp executive guys, especially
Philip
the
Rice
CEO – Like, that I really enjoy that guy's scenes, and I'm hoping that maybe he'll be more involved somewhere along the line. Other people I'm hoping for less, you know? So hopefully it'll work out that way.
It's my sincere hope that the sort of – again, I keep going back to this sequence because I just thought it was so well done on every level. But it's my sincere hope that the sequence of B.D. Wong and Grace Gummer and sort of diving into that storyline is sort of a sign of things to come, that some of the other characters are going to be writ large. Because I will say, is it Darlene, his sister?
Yeah.
I'm pretty done with her.
Me too. You know what? Almost all of F Society is how do you feel? I mean, because we've talked about how sometimes the show can be a little disorienting or hard to follow or a tough watch in some way. I feel like as a viewer, I would like to get more out of Elliot's head. I think the notion of making this more of an ensemble show and being less of having to listen to this unreliable narrator and develop theories about whether what I'm watching is real or not.
Yeah, where are you at on the Elliot's in jail, this is in his head theory?
I hope it's not true.
I also hope it's not true.
That's it.
And
that's where I'm at.
I don't think it's true.
But it's certainly plausible, you know? I'm willing to accept that the whole sections of this are made up. Yeah.
It depends how you mean plausible. It's realistic to think they might have done that. I would not call it plausible.
Oh, you mean as a plotline plausible? If that were true, then what would the whole FBI investigation like? Why would we be in that world if he was already
maybe
in jail?
Maybe he's allegedly awaiting trial. I agree. It would be that would be bad. That would be a bad turn. But I only ask because of you talking about trying to get out of his head more. I totally agree with that, and I don't really. So to me, once you have the reveal, once you have the Fight Club reveal in season one, which I think a lot of the audience saw coming, if not five episodes before, then at least like 5 minutes before.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've done that, the question then to me, the question of like, are we in his head? Are we not in his head? Is this real? Is this not real? Kind of becomes uninteresting.
Yeah. Well, and look, the thing about Fight Club. Is that those monologues, you know, that you're getting from Ed Norton that whole time, they're really interesting. You know what I mean? And Elliot's monologues are not – like I don't want to sit through another dissertation on the rush of hacking. Like it's just not fun.
And there was more in the first season. There was more of the Fight Club style tear down the establishment in the monologue. And now it really is just his own internal drama. Should he hack? Should he not hack? How good does it feel? Is it wrong? You know, should he is it his responsibility to look at the damn website and ruin his life? Mm. All that sort of stuff to me becomes far less interesting. And like, is Craig Robinson a real person or a figment of his imagination to me? If it's not interesting, like if he's a figment of his imagination, why are we bothering?
Yeah.
So like once we've had that reveal, it's like, okay, Elliot's crazy. Now, I get that. Now let's see what else is going on. And that was why I liked this episode, is I felt like you got some side stories with Grace Gummer and B.D. Wong, with a little bit more illumination into what Tyrell Wellick's wife is doing. And then when you did have Elliot and Craig Robinson, Ray, it was more about drawing out who the Ray character is and what's actually happening here than it was about is it real, is it not real.
Yeah, I want to learn more about Ray, and I do hope he's a real person for sure. All right, so you know we've been talking about television basically for 30 minutes now, and we haven't mentioned the show that I guess the most people are watching right now, which is the Olympics.
Do you have those numbers?
Yeah, I mean, look, the numbers are down. I mean, I don't know if you're looking for like exact numbers.
No, I'm just curious. Their
numbers are down, but they're
blowing everybody else out of the water.
I mean, it's still the thing. I mean, you know, it's 17, 18 million people watching as opposed to 24, 25. But it's still 17.
That's pretty significant.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So,
it's a pretty significant decrease.
A significant decrease. That is certainly a question. I'm going to dig a little bit more about this while we talk.
I want to ask you this question. Let's just assume that you're approximately right, and that would be about a 25 to 30% loss of audience.
Okay.
In your mind, is that a natural consequence of 2016? B, a lessening of interest in the Olympics specifically? Or C, a product of the awful programming decisions that NBC has made with these Olympics?
Look, I think all of those questions, not to, you know, not to totally cop out, are they're really a matter of where you stand in the landscape. I think certainly, you know, is the broadcast a victim of 2016? Oh, sorry, that's going to be we want to not have that on there. Sorry, I'm trying to look up this info for you. you know, once you talk about 2016 and Twitter and, you know, your ability to get the information as it's happening as opposed to waiting for a primetime broadcast, yes. That's a problem. It's going to lessen people's enjoyment of it. Yes, there's somewhat, I think, for some people, it's the, you know, the things that NBC packages and sells.
Hold on. Because you, to me, you conflated two of the issues in your first thing there. There's 2016 where there's so many different things to watch. There's so many ways to consume it via Twitter, whatever. The fact that events that happen at noon are broadcast in primetime, that's not 2016's fault. That's NBC's fault. That's what I mean about NBC. They didn't have to make that decision.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm saying is, like, by a matter of perspective, look, the Olympics, I think, are aggressively trying to court casual non-sports viewers, specifically women. You know what I mean? Got another ad here. There we go, popping that down. You know, and that's not
well,
us.
Well, is it so, specifically women?
Like, I want to watch basketball. You know what I mean? I want to watch soccer. And I don't think these are things – you know, NBC wants to show women's gymnastics, and I kind of understand why. And they want to show
NBC
million swimming events.
No. But, Derek, that's exactly my point. NBC did not show women's gymnastics live and, in fact, didn't even put it at the front of primetime. Women's gymnastics aired about 12 hours after it happened at like 11 at night. That's what I'm talking about.
I mean, well, I don't know. It looked like it was prime time where I was. I mean, you know, things may be different in, you know, different time zones, but
it was on the primetime broadcast.
Correct.
But it was after 2 hours of swimming.
Right. Well, that's what I mean. But they're picking and cherry picking different things than I want to watch. But I don't necessarily know that's NBC's fault. Because I'm probably not the prime person that they're trying to talk to.
Yeah, so I guess if 17 million people are watching it in prime time, then those people are not perturbed by the fact that most of that stuff happened 12 hours before.
The trouble for me is that, you know, and maybe this part also plays into the prime time package, is like I'm having difficulty, you know, finding the things I do want to watch. Like, I know
totally agree.
USA
There's
basketball is playing.
Yeah,
they're playing Australia tonight. I think it's 6 Eastern.
6 Eastern, correct.
Yeah, so 5 Central, and, you know, no idea where to find that, though.
You like, want to see if Andrew Bogut cheap shots Draymond Green.
A little
right?
bit. Yeah.
So
yeah. What channel is that going to be on? You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, it's very confusing to figure out what's actually happening schedule-wise.
All right. To kind of give you some full color on the ratings numbers. Over the first 3 nights, NBC averaged 26.7 million viewers. So that's pretty good.
That's a lot.
But London was 36.8.
Whoa. Okay.
So that said, with the swimming and stuff, it has slowed some. So, here we go.
All of London was 36 million?
London,
like that was the average?
No, that was the average for the first 3 nights was 36 million. Okay. They did 29 Sunday night, so it's improving as some of these marquee events are coming along. You know, to give you an example, 1849, which I guess is the prime TV demo, and their number's down 21% from 2012.
Wow. But
they still did a 9.0 share, whereas 60 Minutes and Big Brother drew a 0.6 and a 1.5. So, and yeah, Fox and ABC were both less than a 1. So, like, they're crushing everyone. Everyone's watching this, but
there's no TV that gets a 9 share.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, but it's way – it's less than years past. And I think it's going to continue to be less. I don't think for most people – we talked about this a little bit going in about how we feel a little bit icky about the Olympics and what they represent now. Yeah. I don't think that's something on most people's minds though, right?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
I actually, now that I hear it, I'm more inclined to lean towards it's the natural consequence of the TV environment than it is anything NBC's doing. Because I know it gets to me, but if 29 million people are watching events that are 5 hours old, then I'm in the minority.
Right. And like, as confused as we are, right?
Because I like to watch stuff live.
Me too.
Sports is one of the only things we still watch live, you know? And I like to have the Twitter conversations and all that stuff. And that stuff becomes fractured and sort of useless.
But I mean, like, all right, so women's gymnastics is a perfect example, right?
Yeah, because it happened at 2 in the afternoon and aired at 11.
It did, but I'm not invested in it. And I didn't actually know who won. And I didn't care all that much, but I didn't, you know? I was able to watch it at 10 o'clock on NBC because I, you know, because I hadn't found out and it was new to me. But you know,
part of this is being on sports Twitter all day. Like I have no choice.
Yeah, you have no choice. And you know, I'm on Twitter typically more than I was yesterday. It just sort of worked out. But I sort of wonder, you know, because we're talking about, well, I can't find the basketball or I can't find, you know, oh, I want to watch volleyball today, but I don't know where it is. The one thing that we both know, right, is that, you know, 8 to 11 on NBC, there's going to be stuff. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
And so I think that is their strategy is, hey, we're going to put stuff on from 8 to 11. It's weird to me, you know, that an event where the time zones pretty much match up that they're doing it this way. But, you know, it's what they're doing.
Well, I think the theory must be, and again, based on those numbers, I think the theory is sound, that the people who really care about the Olympics are not people on Twitter or on ESPN.com all day. They're people who want to consume somebody else's selection of Olympic events for 3 hours a night for 2 weeks.
That's probably true. And they're interested in stories and you know, the prepackages and all of that stuff that makes us as sports fans kind of cringe.
So. Yeah, it's there's a lot of human interest, you know, 5-minute human interest pieces on NBC that Bob Costas can talk down to us about.
Yeah, so. God, I mean, they can, if they're going to show us human interest pieces, they could be better at least, right? The stuff I saw from the opening ceremonies was just horrific, you know?
I literally avoid that stuff like the plague. Like if I turn on SportsCenter and it's a Make-A-Wish story,
yeah, I'm so out.
So out. Immediately out.
I don't really turn on SportsCenter anymore.
Will not wait for the Make-A-Wish story to end to get my sports news.
SportsCenter is 100% sound off experience for me because I can't. It's hard with the sound on. I'm not interested in what they're saying.
Well, unfortunately, the SportsCenter talent isn't what it was, which is the real issue. But putting aside SportsCenter, just like all that stuff to me is. It's mostly garbage. You know, if I end up watching it, is it going to bring a tear to my eye? Very possibly. But like, it's all, that's what it, to me, it's artifice. It's artifice made, it's tear-jerking artifice. And I don't totally like the idea that we have to televise every positive charitable thing that's done around sports. Like, I don't know. I'm all for athletes who have overcome the odds, but I'm more for finding out about what they did athletically than I am for constantly talking about the odds they overcame.
Yeah, I'm with that. I don't need those narratives. So, are there any like Olympic things that you're looking forward to? We got what, another week or and a half of this left still?
Yeah, I just don't care. I mean, I'd love it if I will say this. I watched women's soccer yesterday. I watched Hope Solo choke away a win yesterday, and
Yeah, see, I missed that. Would love to have watched that, but couldn't find it.
Yeah. Well, it was at a weird time, and I don't think they put it on in prime time at all.
What channel was it on? Because that's the other thing. Is like the, you know, the Olympics will be on like USA or Bravo or one of those sometimes.
I think it was on CNBC. I'm not even sure.
It
really is impossible to track stuff down. And especially like, you know, I've got Comcast in one location and DirecTV in another. Yeah. And, you know, like some of the cable networks have Olympic-specific special channels that pop up, and other ones you just don't get those.
How
like,
hard would it be to put a bug in the screen, you know, of NBC that where you could at least just go and find the events that are on the other channels?
Yeah, It's very frustrating, and they've got the weird thing is they've got it almost all online. Really, the way to watch this stuff is online.
Right, that's
what I
should
be specific doing.
Things.
But the soccer game. Team USA was underwhelming, and Hope Solo played the worst game I've ever seen her play, which really amounts to two major mistakes, but still.
You know, she had Zeke on her mind.
Maybe, but it was not a good performance, so I am kind of intrigued to see. Because, you know, the teams that, in a vacuum, probably interest me the most are women's soccer and men's basketball, and both of them are such overwhelming favorites. There's some fear that they won't play a single interesting game, and I still think that's probably true of basketball, although I'll watch some of it. But now I'm starting to think maybe we'll get some competition in women's soccer, which I think would be great.
We're the best in women's soccer, but we're not dominant. There are teams that challenge us for sure. So,
well, we were dominant in last year. You know, that's why this is interesting.
Yeah. I mean, look, the World Cup, you know, they won, but, you know, they were challenged.
Yeah, but they won the final by 6 goals, and I think
that's correct. But that's a rarity. You know what I mean? Like, they don't win every competition.
No, I know. Believe me, I get it. Yeah. I'm just saying that's the lasting image of last year.
Yeah.
And so when they come in and, you know, are eking out a 2-1 win over Colombia and then have a nasty free kick. Did you at least see the highlight?
No, I haven't seen anything.
Oh, yeah. You gotta.
I read on Twitter. I did catch that on Twitter, but I didn't see it.
Scroll back through my tweets a little bit. I tweeted the vine of the shot. It is. So if you were Hope Solo, it's off to the left side of the box. Not quite corner kick location, a little bit out from the baseline and a little bit out from the sideline from where a corner kick would be. And the woman blasts a left foot hook shot, basically, that goes right over. I think Hope Solo may even have grazed it with her fist.
All right.
And it goes right into the far upper corner. It is a beast of a shot. But it is a beast of a shot that I think Hope Solo would tell you she should have saved.
Yeah.
And the first goal went through her damn legs. So it was a weird one.
Hope Solo Schadenfreude isn't the worst. You know what I mean?
It's not, but I will
say, you don't root against Team USA, but
I think, and I don't know where people are at on this, I think Hope Solo might be the greatest American soccer athlete ever.
Ooh, yeah, I'm gonna hard pass on that.
Oh yeah,
who's
your number one US?
I don't think she's the greatest soccer athlete on that team.
Oh,
or the second greatest soccer athlete on that team. Well, maybe
really?
on this current team, I guess. But I mean,
so Abby Wambach is yours.
Yeah, if you're talking historically, Abby Wambach,
those are the two for me. Well, the men don't rate.
Well, hold on a second, because Abby Wambach, Mia Hamm
is up there.
Yeah, and Alex Morgan. I would I'll take over Hope Solo.
I think Alex Morgan is overrated. Yeah. And I think Hope Solo is the elite of the elite.
How much better? Yeah, she's the best in the world right now. How much better was she than Breonna Scurry?
Oh, I think she's a lot better than Breonna Scurry.
Yeah, I know.
Breonna Scurry shouldn't even have played in the World Cup she played in. That should have been Hope Solo.
Because Hope Solo was an awful person. Is Hope Solo better than Marta? I mean, look, you're getting into goalkeeper versus position player stuff. But
is Hope Solo better than Marta is a tough question, but I kind of think yes. I think Hope Solo plays that position as well as you can.
I'm not trying to take anything away from her because I think she's very good. I would also say,
to me, it's Wambach, Hamm, and Solo.
Let's get into sort of an apples to apple comparison. That's also an apples to oranges comparison.
Okay.
Hope Solo versus Tim Howard.
Oh, Hope Solo.
Oh, yeah, see, I don't know.
I don't think Tim Howard was ever the best goalie in the world.
No, that's correct.
I love Tim Howard.
That's correct. But, I mean, I don't – putting Hope Solo back there against Belgium and let's see what happens.
Well, but that's a dumb thing to say.
You know what I mean? Like,
so wait, well, are you saying is Hope Solo physically more athletic than Tim Howard?
No, I'm not.
No,
yeah.
Of course she's not.
But what is the measure exactly? Because yes,
well, I think it has. It's relative to the other to what the position is and to what you do. And like, I think Hope Solo's
Tim Howard.
Let me put it this way: I think Hope Solo, straight up, not adjusting for male versus female. I think straight up, Hope Solo is closer to Tim Howard or the best goaltender in the male soccer world than any other female soccer player is to their counterpart.
That might be true. But I would just say on a relative basis, yes. Was Tim Howard ever the best in the world? No. But he was among the best in the world for a long time, which is a huge achievement for an American player. So I wouldn't just because there's also a lot – the world, quote-unquote, of world-class goaltenders – is so much deeper on the male side than it is on the female side.
Everything's deeper on the male side. So that's why the top three women soccer players of all time are probably all American. But that doesn't take
Didn't even get into like the early, like Michelle Akers or, you know, people who are really, really dominant in an era where there were many fewer players.
Yeah, there's a little bit of Wilt Chamberlain syndrome in there for me.
Yeah, but Michelle Akers was a beast. You know, like, she was a dominant player. So
yeah, but so was Wilt Chamberlain, and no one is going to argue he's the greatest basketball player ever.
All right, fair enough. But people will argue that about Babe Ruth, and you could argue some of the same stuff.
I think most people who would argue that Babe Ruth – well, I don't want to get into the Babe Ruth. That's a whole can of worms.
Because we got to get going. While we're on the soccer subject, though, I would like to assign for homework – for all of you, the English Premier League starts up in official this weekend.
So let me ask you,
how do I
consume the English Premier League? I know it's on NBC or whatever. It's on at like 6 a.m. on Saturday, is that right?
Yeah, look, the West Coast is toughest.
So like, what do you do? Are you up Saturday morning watching Premier League? Do you DVR it? When do you watch it?
Well,
because that's been the problem for me. The last two or three years, I've been like, all right, this is the season I get into Premier League.
So this is how you do it. Now, look, obviously it's toughest on the West Coast because of the time zone differences. The start times are the earliest. Now, there are essentially three broadcast windows on Saturday, if you think of this like a football game, right? There's a an early game. There's maybe two early games sometimes, but, you know, one or two early games. That's the one that for me starts at 6, and for you is going to be like, you know, a 4:30 game.
Yeah.
Look, when I lived out there and Arsenal was playing and, you know, people were doing stuff, occasionally I would get up and go to the bar to watch that with other Arsenal fans. Oftentimes
at 4:30 in the morning?
Yeah, I would do that. But
I can't do that.
That's diehard stuff. And off most of the time I would DVR it and just watch it when I woke up. There's another window of games after that that for me at Central Time is like 9:30, I think it is. And that's a pretty easable make for me. And then there's the Monday night-ish game, and that's an 11:30 Central start, so a 9:30 start for you. That one usually I'm pretty much watching live anytime. So DVR, is your friend, as that goes. But it's doable, and particularly if you have a team or an interest that you want to follow. Now is the time, obviously, because there's no NFL, and you got a little bit of spotlight to yourself.
That's the other problem, right? Is football is going to distract me from football.
The one positive of football – starting so early on the West Coast, actually, I guess it's true anywhere, you get those games in before.
Yeah.
And one of the best things of my sports life over the last couple of years has been training Sunday morning pregame for actual athletic competition. It's massively more enjoyable.
So there's Sunday morning games too?
Yes, there are usually two windows of games on Sunday, and then there's typically a Monday afternoon game while you're at work. I guess that would be probably early Monday morning. For you.
Yeah.
I think like 11 o'clock on the West Coast on Monday.
Yeah, I catch those at work often, or bits and pieces of them anyway. All right. Well, listen, tell me this. How's Chelsea? Because I lived briefly in Chelsea when I was in London for just like a couple of months in like literally the projects next to Chelsea, which is a really nice neighborhood, which is kind of funny. So they're the team that I would like to root for. How are they doing? Can I root for them? Are they a good team to root for?
I would never encourage you to root for Chelsea.
I understand you're an Arsenal fan, but like I think it would be good to have some podcast competition. And like, am I at least jumping on with a team that I can find some exciting things about? Like Eden Hazard right now? Is that
Hazard? It's
I'll call him Hazard. Thank you very much.
So look, Chelsea is perennially a contender, except for last year. They had this sort of mysterious fall where the team got too old. And because they're, you know, sort of the, you know, a Yankees style club, in English soccer, they just spent a bunch of money and reloaded.
All right. So who are my exciting new free agents?
So, N'Golo Kanté, who was one of the main stars of, Leicester City. Was probably the big addition who's going to kind of man the middle.
That's the Leicester City team that upset everybody, right?
That won the league, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then I think the thing that people are most excited about is the new manager, Victor Conte, who was the manager of Italy in these last Euros.
Of Balco.
and seemed to be Maybe I'm confusing with the Balco guy. Seemed to be the best manager in that tournament. And it has a lot of success in Europe, and I think people are pretty excited about it.
Antonio Conte. Antonio Conte.
Yes, you're right. Victor Conte is the Balco guy. Excuse me.
Yeah. Victor Conte, also part of Tower of Power Horns, I believe.
That is correct. Yeah. That should be burned into my brain forever.
All right, so I'm going to try to get into
Chelsea. Worth watching.
So here's what you can do. Just keep pushing me. I know this is hard for you, but I need you to push me to Chelsea. I need you to be the driver driving me to Chelsea fandom, so I can really lock into Premier League. I want to lock in.
So here is so the way the league is set up, right? There's no playoffs in the English Premier League, right? You're just trying to win the league, have the most points. The top four teams. Get into Champions League, which is, you know, where you play the other best teams in Europe. So finishing the top four is prestigious. This year, there are six teams that have a really – probably an equal shot at getting those top four spots. And none of those six teams is Leicester City, who won the league. So no one is quite sure where they're going to be. There'll probably be some additional surprises. It's going to be a season that's that seems to be pretty even – a lot of intrigue. Manchester United has a new manager in Jose Mourinho, who is the old Chelsea manager, who's a presence, and they added some really big name players. So you figure they're going to be back in the mix. Tottenham is really young. Arsenal's Arsenal. It's really going to be an interesting competitive season. And if you like narrative, you know what I mean. Like the Premier League, very good at narratives.
All right, I have one more Premier League question for you.
Okay.
Do you watch or know of a good – like if I'm Joe Plummer and I'm like, I don't know that I have time to watch a lot of Premier League matches, or like I'm going to pick my team. I'm going to pick Chelsea and try to watch them. But I would like to be abreast of Premier League storylines and issues. Is there like a Premier League nightly? Like, do you have like a go-to recap show? Like, where do you stay up on the Premier League at large?
Okay, so NBC Sports coverage of the Premier League is phenomenal.
Okay.
Yeah, like, it's by far, in terms of a quality thing, the best thing that NBC does.
Really?
Yeah, like, they're really good at it. The game coverage is great. The analysts are good. They know what they're talking about. And
great.
They're so reliant on this material that they repackage it in all kinds of amazing ways. So, on match days, there's a show called Goal Zone where they literally show every goal that day, which will also help. But they
that's on what?
Goal Zone on match days. So Saturdays and Sundays.
Oh, on match days. Gotcha.
They also have a Premier League review show where, you know, you maybe watch a 3-4 minute version of a 90-minute game, so it's kind of like extended highlights.
Uh-huh.
You know, you get to see build up towards goals,
highlight packages where
and
you
stuff
actually
like
get
that.
To see what happened in a game.
Even a little less edited than that. Yeah. So
okay.
you'll see the minute and a half stretch that led up to a goal, that kind of thing.
That's good, because one of the tough things about soccer is it's not a great highlight sport.
Yeah. So they do that very well. You know, if you like some soccer announcers, like theirs are great. I would recommend that. And then the third thing I'd recommend, primarily as a podcast, is the Men in Blazers podcast, which used to be on the Grantland Network and then kind of broke off and doing their own thing. That's great. They also do a 30-minute television show version of Men in Blazers Monday nights on NBC Sports. You get a little bit more of a humorous look at what happened around the league. You may not find all the scores, but you'll definitely get the main storylines of the league in that show, and you'll do it in 30 minutes.
So basically what you're saying is NBC Sports is doing well with this. This is a place for everyone to get to know NBC Sports.
It absolutely. That's true. And you know, the ratings are up 50% to 75% every season. So
well, that's no surprise. I can even, as someone working in sports media, where I, you know, part of my job is following the general sports conversation, the degree to which that conversation has been more and more involving soccer, is very noticeable. Just around the station, from people who call in and tweet in, like, people have their Premier League teams. People are watching. It's becoming a thing in America.
Yeah, it's definitely becoming a thing, and to me, it's a thing that's worth your time. It's a richly rewarding sports experience. It's been more important to me these last couple of years than I'm watching way more Premier League than I'm watching baseball, for example.
Well, that won't be hard for me to do.
Yeah.
That's a modest goal that I think I can reach.
And that's, I didn't make a conscious decision. That's just sort of been like, oh, I'm interested in this.
You just started watching two things, and one was more entertaining, so you started to watch more of the more entertaining thing. And by the way,
it's cut into my college football
like
a little bit, too.
I would just like to point out that you're a huge baseball guy, so the fact that they're losing you to the Premier League is a ringing indictment of baseball's viewing experience, which I continue to rail against.
That is true. I am generally pro-baseball. I love college football, and I'm watching less college football. Like the early window games on Saturday, I don't really watch that much anymore. So
the way you're putting this, like, since I don't love baseball or college football all that much, this is all of a sudden getting more and more appealing to me.
Yeah, well, and the season is October to May, so it does fill out. I should say August to May. Excuse me. Yeah. So
you're saying there's more than a handful of games.
Yeah. There's plenty of time for you to fill in gaps. So
I got a Chelsea beanie right here in my room. I'm ready to go.
I really feel like I need to encourage you to find a different team, but we'll get to that another day.
I lived there. I literally lived there.
In London or in Chelsea neighborhood itself?
Both.
Because, there's a lot of London teams. We can find another London team.
I literally lived in the projects on the edge of Chelsea in London.
All right.
It's the only London soccer stadium I've been to.
I'm gonna try to forgive you for this.
This is perfect. We're going to fight now.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to that.
Don't fight against our strife. Embrace our strife. Embrace our soccer strife.
Embrace debate. That's the future of this podcast.
I'm going to come back in 2 weeks knowing almost nothing about Premier League soccer and talking an amazing amount of trash about Chelsea somehow.
We'll probably enjoy that. Probably enjoy that.
Game on.
All right. We will talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.